Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Side 2 of For the Record, program number 526, interview with Ed Haslam about Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. This is being recorded on September 11th of the year 2005. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to the For the Record airwaves Ed Haslam, longtime resident of New Orleans and the author of the landmark book Mary, Fairy, and the Monkey Virus. Ed, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave.
Well, we've been talking about what happened in New Orleans, and you have given the listeners some instructions about what to bring up and exactly what we're going to be looking at. Why don't you repeat that on this side very briefly, and then let's get into the substance of what actually occurred down in the Crescent City.
What happened was New Orleans flooded. We're talking about the major destruction of a major American city. We're talking about $100 billion in damage and somewhere between 1 and 10,000 lives lost. All right, this is a major event in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Why did this happen? Now, what I want to do is offer your listeners the ability to look at the real evidence without being filtered by the media. And let's go in and take a look from the satellite, from your own home on your computer, and see what happened. So I'm going to ask you to open up your browser and go to maps.google.com. That's maps.google.com. That will bring up a map of the United States. Right above the map, there's a search gadget. And into that search gadget, I want you to type the name of a street. Okay? These are four words, and they are Drifter Lane, New Orleans.
Now, should they be separated or just all in one set of quotes?
Well, they're four words, so you want a space between the four words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The capitalization is not important. You don't need any punctuation. Google will sort it out. All right.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried it every way I can think of. So Drifter, that's kind of like the vagabond who goes from town to town, but actually it's a sailing term. It refers to when the wind is very light and your boat is just drifting. There's a special sail you put up in that situation. It's called a drifter, and that's why this street is named Drifter Lane. That's lane like court or road or lane.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is Drifter Lane. And then add the words New Orleans. Now, this street is only about a block long, but it's right next to the thing we want to look at. So if you type in Drifter Lane, New Orleans, and, of course, click search, it will bring up a map that is very detailed and very close to where we want to be.
So what people want to bring up on their search function at map?
Yeah, one thing I can say is if you just go to Google,
mm-hmm.
the normal Google homepage, they have the thing that says web, news, and all that stuff. On the right-hand side, it says more.
Mm-hmm.
If you click more, you go into the second page. Scroll down a little bit, and at the bottom of that first column is something called maps. So if you check on that, click on that, it'll bring you to the same map of the United States that I was referring to. Then you type in Drifter Lane, New Orleans. Drifter Lane, New Orleans. That's O-R-L-E-A-N-S. Let me catch up with you. Let me do that right now. Maps, M-A-P-S dot G-O-O-G-L-E dot com. Here's my map of the United States. I'm typing in Drifter, D-R-I-F-T-E-R, space, Lane, L-A-N-E, the word new, and then Orleans, which is O-R-L-E-A-N-S. Hit enter. And here comes our little map with a balloon that says Drifter Lane, New Orleans. Close the balloon, and what you're looking at the top of the thing is blue. That's Lake Pontchartrain. At the bottom is the city of New Orleans, and there's a teardrop-shaped red thing in the middle, which is your locator, which tells you exactly where Drifter Lane is. You also see four little boxes up there. One says map, satellite, hybrid, and Katrina. Map is what you're looking at, which is why it's bold. It just shows you the map. satellite is a satellite photo. Hybrid is a combination of the map over the satellite, and the bright red one is Katrina. I want you to click on Katrina.
Okay.
All right. Now we have a satellite photo. The right half of it is kind of dark green. That is the city of New Orleans, which is flooded. The left half of the photo is dry. That is Jefferson Parish. The spine of the photo is the canal we're going to be talking about.
By the way, Ed, we should mention that there is a zoom function there to the left, on the upper left-hand part of the screen, so people can zoom in and get close-ups.
Right, and I'm going to get to that, and I want you to stay with me on this.
Sure.
So that we're all looking at the same zoom level.
Right? Okay.
The thing that looks like a fish skeleton,
mm-hmm.
a spine there at the bottom of it has a minus sign, and at the top of it has a plus sign. Okay? But before you touch any of that stuff, I want you to notice that if you look at the red locator button, just to the left of that, there's a little bridge. Okay, I want you to double-click on the bridge. That moves things a little bit, but what that does is center the program on the spot we want to center on. Okay, now, once that's centered on, go over to that plus sign on the left-hand side and click it one time. That zooms us into the next level. Now, what we see here is the 17th Street Canal. For some reason, that I need to click on it twice to get to the level where I was before. What you should see at the bottom of your screen is the canal with a break in it on the right-hand side, just below the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's visible here. We're looking at it in the production studio.
Okay, good. Now, this is where the break occurred. This is how Lake Pontchartrain flooded into the city of New Orleans.
This basically is the fatal wound that New Orleans suffered, that breach.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well put. This is how the $100 million of damage occurred.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's exactly in this spot. Now, therefore, this is a very important photograph. On the right side of the photograph, you see flooded property. On the left side of the photograph, you see dry property. At the top of the photograph is Lake Pontchartrain. That's the destination for where they pump the water out. And at the below the bottom of the photograph is the pumping station that pumps the water out of the city of New Orleans, like we were talking about in the last segment. Okay. Now, let's look at this bridge for a minute.
Okay, we got it. We're looking at it.
Okay, the bridge goes left to right, but there's this stuff on top of the bridge. What is that? Well, let's click the zoom again. Let's click it one more time. What you're looking at there is thousands of pounds of debris from buildings and boats that Hurricane Katrina destroyed. And when the winds were coming from the north and the water was high, it pushed all this wood up against this bridge, forming a dam, just like beavers build a dam. Now, here's one of my common sense questions. Look at the water below the bridge. You see how it's full, like a bathtub being full? Now, look at the water above the bridge. It's much lower. Now, I personally have been driven down there, walked down there, everything else. I know the terrain of this thing extremely well. The water on the north side of the bridge, which is the top of the photograph, is lower than the water inside the canal. Now, how does that happen? If the threat is the wind blowing the water from the Gulf of Mexico into the Lake Pontchartrain and then Lake Pontchartrain down upon the bridge, the water should be higher on the north, but it's not. It's lower. And we just saw that the spill occurred on the right side. Now, I'm going to ask you to click the minus sign. That's going to zoom you out a little bit.
That's at the bottom of the fish scale in the upper left
bottom
of the screen.
Bottom of the fish scale, yes.
Okay.
Okay, now you got four little buttons up there. They say Map, Satellite, Hybrid, and Katrina. This time I want you to click Satellite.
Okay.
This is the before picture. This shows you what this area looked like before the storm. Now, you will notice the bridge is different. That's because they rebuilt the bridge. They made it into one big reinforced bridge. But there's a lot of other stuff in here that's really important. Above the bridge, you will see a bunch of boats. These boats are the shrimping boats of what's called Bucktown, which is a commercial fishing community. Across the street from those boats are the restaurants, which are no longer there. They're the debris that we saw on the bridge. South of the bridge, you will see some dark areas and then some light areas. That is because the water is so shallow in that drainage canal that you can see the bottom. The light areas are the bottom. And you will notice that the water is not stretched out to the flood walls. So, this is the before picture. Now click Katrina, and you see the after picture. There are no restaurants, or there's one or two buildings, but just about everything is wiped away. All that debris is piled up against this bridge. This forms a dam. Now, I said I was a sailor. I also worked in boatyards. I also built boats. Right? One of the things I learned in that process was that if you build a wooden boat and you put it in water, the boat leaks until something happens. When you put dry wood in water, it starts to absorb the water and expand. This is an incredible force. I mean, this force is so strong the Egyptians used to use it to break stone. Now, when you put all that dry wood into the canal and blow it underneath the bridge and then fill it with water, that's going to seal about as tight as you need to seal it, which is why the water above the bridge is lower than the water below the bridge. Now, the water below the bridge in this canal is where they're dropping 6 elephants per second of water into it. Now, what I'm saying...
And now, we should say that is the volume. Volume equivalent of 6 elephants a second is being pumped into the 17th Street Canal.
Right, from the Mid-City Pumping Station, which is officially called the 17th Street Pumping Station.
Right.
But they're pumping the water from the 18 inches of water that Katrina rained on New Orleans, right? That's enough to flood that area all by itself. These people are very anxious to get that water out of the city. And every time they've had a big rain in the past, the rain comes down, they throw the switch, they turn on the pumps, they send the water into the canal, the water goes to the lake, and the problem is solved. But not this time. This time, there's a dam underneath the bridge that they didn't anticipate. And when they threw the switch to that pump and they filled that canal, they were thinking the water was emptying into the lake. They did not know that there was a dam of debris at the Bucktown Bridge which was stopping it. Now, if you look at that bridge, see the little police car there?
The current resolution, you mean on the bridge itself?
Yeah, on the bridge itself, there's a police car.
So that's sort of near the lower left-hand corner of the bridge?
If you zoom in on that, you can count them. There's 10 of them there. They're watching the flood. Right behind them is the debris itself. Now, if any of those guys had picked up the radio and said, we have a problem here. Someone needs to tell the 17th Street Canal to turn off its pumps before this thing floods, it wouldn't have flooded. If they had removed that debris, if they had said, turn off the pumps, get a crane in here or a stick of dynamite and let's get this debris out of here and unclog this canal and allow the flow from the city to go into the lake, they never would have flooded the city. Now, what I'm saying in clear and unambiguous language is these people who were in charge of the mechanics of running the pumps were not in proper communication with the people they should have been in communication with. And because of that, they made what became a fatal error, which has cost $100 billion and created a social catastrophe pretty much never seen before in the United States. Now, does this relate to September 11th? I think it does. And this is what we're going to explore.
Go ahead, Ed. And by the way, I've been following along on the computer here in the production studio, and it really is quite something to actually take a look. And with your Mariners expertise, explaining to us what happened in terms of the wood and so forth. So it's a very interesting account indeed. And that basically, that dam, which sealed what normally would have been the drainage from the 17th Street Canal into Lake Pontchartrain, that is what inflicted the mortal wound on the city of New Orleans.
That's right. And this happened, just a reminder, 4 hours after the hurricane had passed. And it took that amount of time to fill up this 4-mile-long canal with enough water to reach its top.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody who was there had just said, tell the people to turn off the pumps until we get this thing solved, the city would have never flooded.
So that's what the issue turned on right there, that blockage of the 17th Street Canal and the failure to realize that meant they had to turn off the pumps.
Right. I mean, this Bucktown Bridge, the debris up against the Bucktown Bridge caused the dam that created the entire flood scenario. This is the, this is the headshot. I mean, this is the exact problem that caused the problem. Now, if you went to Harvard University and you went to the John F. Kennedy School of Government and you went through all the professors and their courses and their papers and everything else, you'd eventually find something that said human factors in emergency management under stress. And that's what this is. This is a human error. This is not God or weather wiping out the city of New Orleans. This is somebody standing in a pumping station who pushed a button that flooded the city. Now, I promised to relate this to 9/11 since we're on the 4th anniversary of 9/11.
Yeah.
I flew to New York City a couple of months before the September 11th attack. I was sitting in the back seat of the airplane, and it occurred to me as we were flying up the East River, I looked out the window and I saw the World Trade Center things, and we were so close to them that it occurred to me that, in a fog we could have hit them by accident, I said, it's a good thing we have all this radar and, Doppler and LORAN and all this stuff, because if we get this close to these buildings in routine business, that makes it the perfect terrorist target. And I looked around at the crew, and the crew had been overworked. They were exhausted. I looked up at the front, and the door to the cockpit was open, and a stewardess was standing in the door talking to the pilot. If anybody had wanted to seize control of that airplane and fly it into the World Trade Center building, it would not have been a problem if they were willing to die doing it. And I thought about this, and I said, all they need to stop this is a lock on that door. And they need the pilots to understand that it doesn't matter whose throat they cut on the other side of the door, you don't open the door. Now, if that simple common sense had been in place, September 11th never would have happened. So I promised that I was going to get to a thematic point here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thematic point is, I don't care how many billions of dollars you spend, how many people you employ, how much training you give them, how do they protect us from stupidity and incompetence? Because in my view, September 11th was not some thing inflicted upon us. It was a failure of our system. Because, if you're not paying attention to the news, then maybe you don't know that people are trying to kill us. And why? Because they have their reasons. But there was this guy, his name was O'Brien, FBI agent?
You're talking about John O'Neill.
John O'Neill.
He was the guy who was in charge of the FBI's Bin Laden investigation. Then on the day, on September 11th, had assumed his first day as security coordinator for the World Trade Center.
Right, and he was running around with his hair on fire, telling everybody in Washington and as close to the White House as he could get that everything they needed to know about September 11th was in Saudi Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
And he became so frustrated with their lack of response to his dire warnings that he actually resigned from the FBI and found a new job. And his new job was security director of the World Trade Centers, and he started actually on September 10th, the day before. And the last anyone heard from him was a phone call he made to his son as he was running between buildings and the second building fell on him. Now the point is, if you know, I'm an art history major. If I can sit in the back of an airplane and see what is the most obvious terrorist target in America and wonder what the security people are doing about it, and if the security guy who's in charge of worrying about that is focused on the exact same thing and he knows exactly who's going to do it and almost when they're going to do it, and he can't get anybody's attention, what are we dealing with? This is not conspiracy. If it's a conspiracy, it's a conspiracy of incompetence.
There are a couple of things, Ed, just by way of interjection. There obviously were some very profound conspiratorial aspects to this, although I also think that simply the factor of, for lack of a better term, institutional inertia. When you're hooked up with an organization, you don't generally buck the people above you. And when there's a relationship through which tremendous amounts of capital are pouring, such as between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia via the petroleum industry, generally speaking, people do not go against the grain, either against the capital flow or against the dominating hierarchy of that organization. So there were certainly some overtly conspiratorial aspects. Yet at the same time, incompetence is increasingly becoming a factor in this country. There was a study done at Cornell in the late 90s that indicated that people who are incompetent generally not only don't experience their own incompetence as such, but they generally blame it on other people, think that they are incompetent. There certainly has been no shortage of that. And
That's the Dilbert cartoon. I mean, that's it in spades. I mean, it's also the Peter principle. But the point is, if that's true, if they are part of a mechanism which is so large that it's incapable of functioning, then why do we continue to finance it?
Meaning, to continue to finance which, Ed? I'm unclear as to your meaning here.
Well, if we have all this homeland security stuff, mm-hmm. Okay, the Coast Guard is... remember the fish scale on the left?
Mm-hmm.
Let's click the zoom out button.
Okay, we're almost out of time here, Ed.
Okay, well, good. Well, you see the red roof there? That's
yeah.
The Coast Guard station. That's part of Homeland Security. All right,
mm-hmm.
That's 200 yards from this bridge. Now, how come if we have a Homeland Security office 200 yards from the bridge, nobody picked up the radio and told the people to turn off the pumps?
Thereby hangs a tale, huh? There are, because, you know, I've done a huge volume of material on September 11th. There were some exceedingly conspiratorial aspects, yet I don't think one had to be Nostradamus. Ed, as we're finishing this up, I'm sitting in the production studio with a good friend of mine and my engineer, and in the spring of 2001, I remember talking with him about scenarios to try to get my archive inventory someplace that would be safe from disaster, because I was worried about the possibility of an earthquake in California, which can obviously be a natural occurrence. It can also be triggered by existing technologies. But one of the things that I was talking about was what I felt was an impending catastrophic terrorist incident in New York City. And this Eric is nodding his head. I don't know if he wants to weigh in on Mike, because he was my witness, and I was I was sitting in, and I was talking with him and saying one of the things that I think we have to be very careful of is I think there's a very real possibility of a catastrophic terrorist incident in New York, possibly from Bin Laden or some other element. So
Dave, can I just repeat this Google address?
Yes, please.
Okay, it's maps.google.com.
Mm-hmm.
And into the search engine, type the words Drifter Lane, New Orleans. And that will bring you to the picture of this bridge that we're talking about. And by the way, this picture is public domain. It's property of the federal government, but it's free to all citizens. So anyone who wants to use it and reproduce it has the legal right to do so.
Mm-hmm. And that basically is that is what produced the death of New Orleans, basically.
That's
that is the fatal wound.
That's the cause. That's the headshot. That's the mortal wound in this whole thing. If they had removed the debris from this bridge before turning on the pumps, New Orleans would have never flooded. You know, I've been asked by my family, well, you can't reverse this, you know? I mean, what are you accomplishing by this? Well, what I'm accomplishing by this is somebody made a mistake that cost $100 billion and thousands of lives and ruined my hometown, okay? And
mm-hmm.
I think somebody ought to put a microphone in front of them and say, what happened? Tell us why you made this mistake.
Well, indeed. I don't think necessarily that we're going to be hearing that. Ed, we are out of time here. I really appreciate your taking the time to explain to us just what happened there, because there is all kinds of stuff going around the internet, true or false, about what did or didn't happen, and you have seen a lot of that, and we're not real impressed with what you saw.
Well, a lot of the basic information's wrong. I mean, people, said the pumping station itself was where the leak occurred. They said there was a barge floating in this drainage canal that caused the thing. I mean, the basic facts are wrong. Okay,
mm-hmm.
And what if you go to Drifter Lane, New Orleans, in the Google Maps thing,
mm-hmm.
and you look at this, you will see the satellite photo from the government of exactly where the spot is, and draw your own conclusions. You know, I'm not asking you to accept mine, but I am asking you to explain to yourself if there's thousands of pounds of debris from these destroyed restaurants sitting on top of this bridge, and the break in the levee happens to be 200 yards away, then maybe there's a connection.
Yes, indeed. Ed, we are all out of time here. So once again, to get a hold of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, write to Ed Haslam, Haslam, P.O. Box 15381, Bradenton, Florida, 34280, and that's a book well worth reading. There have been a number of interviews I've done with Ed about his book. Those are archived by sister station WFMU. www.spitfirelist.com is the website for Spitfire, the CD duplication service that stocks the various tapes and CDs that I've done over the years. They have a wealth of information on their website. Each For the Record show is turned into a written description. At the top of that description is a link, or links, I should say, to that wealth of information that's available, including links to a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. We have been visiting with Ed Haslam and talking about the destruction that Hurricane Katrina visited on New Orleans. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 526, interview with Ed Haslam about Hurricane Katrina and New Orleans, being recorded on September 11th, 2005. My name's Dave Emery for Ed Haslam, saying thanks for listening.